Next time you need something signed, sealed, and delivered, think of Amazon.com. Get the best deals on everything you need and help support Rob's podcast when you start your Amazon shopping with our link, robswebsite.com/Amazon, or with our friends in Canada, robswebsite.com/AmazonCA. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's a man who actually takes quite a lot of lip from a lot of people, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast, voicemail edition, week number 4 of Survivor Co Wrong. Very excited to get into everything from this week's Survivor episode and listen to what you guys had to say about the episode with my good buddy Jessica Lees, my co-host on All Things Amazing Race. She'll be joining us to talk through everything from this week's Survivor. We did our Survivor Know-It-Alls Wednesday night. Of course, exit interviews, which we'll discuss in more detail here on the show today. That's all up on robinswebsite.com. Talk to Beast Mode Cowboy and Alicia. Thought they both did a really good job on the exit interview. And then had a really fun podcast with Aris, returned to the podcast for the first time since Worlds Apart. Talked to him, had a very fun chat here today earlier. Really recommend you checking out that podcast as well if you haven't done so already. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to bring in one of my favorite podcast co-hosts. You know her from our coverage of The Amazing Race every week live at 9:15 p.m. Eastern Time. She is our chief Amazing Race correspondent here on Rob Has a Podcast. Let's welcome back the great Jessica Lees.
Jess is Jessica,
and I am sorry to tell you that you are the last team to arrive, and you have been eliminated from the race.
Oh, no.
El Rezo.
Yeah, sorry about that, Jess.
Oh, man.
All right, Jess. Always nice to have you back here on the podcast, of course. We do get to chat every week about The Amazing Race. And of course, The Amazing Race is going strong, social media edition, Friday nights on CBS. And Jessica and I are covering all that. We've got exit interviews as well on Mondays where I talk to each team. Did you listen to this week's Amazing Race exit interview, Jess?
You know, I haven't gotten around to it yet.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, check that one out. That's a good one.
All right. I will check it out.
I don't always say check out The Amazing Race exit interview, but this is, I think it's worthwhile this week. All right. So, Jess, how have you been?
I've been pretty good.
Been
enjoying the season. I've been working hard here and elsewhere.
Okay. Well, it was a very dramatic episode last night. Lots of drama in the challenge, lots of drama taking place amongst the people chatting during the challenge, drama back at camp. So really a drama all around. Jeff Probst was not just whistling Dixie when he said this was the most dramatic episode ever.
Yeah. And you know, I'm pretty psyched that you asked me to do the voicemails this week, because the last time that you had me do the voicemails, it was an obvious boot and maybe one of the most boring episodes that I'd ever seen of the show. I believe that was the Nina boot.
No, we must have done it last season.
Oh, maybe we did do it last season, but it was,
I think you're blocking stuff out.
Perhaps I am. But I remember that one being incredibly boring, and trying to think of enough things to say was a chore.
I don't think it was the Nina boot, because I feel like that we did that the week of the live know-it-alls, and I think I just did voicemails with Nicole that week.
Maybe so.
Maybe.
Someone's going to go back in the archives.
Somebody
and find
let us
out
know
what boring ass episode this was that you subjected me to.
All right. Well, and somebody go back and find out what episode we talked about last season, because I'm sure that must have been exciting.
Maybe it was.
It might have been the premiere last season.
Oh, you know, you're right. I think it was.
Yeah, so that was exciting.
Yeah, that was exciting.
Anyway, Jess, so I know from following you on Twitter, you were very fired up about last night's episode.
I certainly was. And I didn't realize that I would get such a response out of this.
So you got a response on Twitter from your response that you were fired up.
One of these tweets got retweeted like 150 times.
Wow. Okay, so what did you say that got retweeted 150 times?
What I said that got retweeted 150 times was basically, I had two different ones that people responded to a lot. And one of them was, I'm appalled that a guy with two young daughters apparently thinks it's perfectly okay to bully a young woman on national TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I also got, I kind of mitigated this a little bit because I did think about it, and especially it's something you guys touched on in Know-It-Alls, and it was something that occurred to me as well. I'm sure Alicia was not fun to be around, but that really doesn't excuse what we saw.
Right.
And I've been getting a lot of feedback from this. Most of it fairly agreeing with me, and some of it people have said it's an overreaction. People have defended the parties in question, but there's a lot of controversy here to unpack.
Good. Well, let's start to get into it before we dig into any of the voicemails. And again, you never want to dig too much because you could end up just completely exasperated and medevaced out of the voicemail podcast.
Dig, woman!
Yeah, I really don't want to get medevaced out of the podcast. I'm not going out like that.
Well, then let me start off with our coverage and Stephen and my conversation from last night. That did you feel like that we were on the right track, or did you feel like that we were on the wrong track in how we were covering the events from Wednesday night?
Well, I appreciated all of the disavowal.
We were very much disavowing the behavior of Scott and Jason, even though apparently to some people, I did not disavow enough.
Yeah, that's what I was getting. I had somebody tweet at me that they hoped I would rip into you, which I'm obviously not going to do. You know, I'm a nice person.
Yes.
But, you know, that being said, I did have a couple of quibbles with some of the points that were made. And, you know, this is something I'm wading into territory that's a little bit over my head, because this is not something I have ever done or would ever do.
Bullying? And,
well, bullying, of course, but going on Survivor is something that I'm never going to do in this lifetime. And interestingly enough,
never
we'll
say
into,
never, Jess.
We'll
Justin
get into
Bieber
why
never
I would
does.
Never do this.
Right.
You know, it's not a place I've ever been. I've never put myself through that kind of thing. And so I don't necessarily know how I would deal with someone who worked my last nerve 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
So it is possible that Alicia was just really, really annoying, and they were all stressed out. Their ability to cope was eroding. But that being said, I don't think it's a great excuse, because we saw that their treatment of her in this matter started on day one.
Yes.
And second of all, I don't think she's the most annoying person we've ever had on Survivor.
Probably not.
Plenty of other annoying people on other seasons did not get treated like this.
Yes. Now, did you listen to my exit interview with her as well today?
Yes, I did.
I did think that was also somewhat illuminating. And, you know, from what she was saying in the exit interview, I definitely felt like that she said that she did not realize most of what they were saying to her or about her until she watched the show, even though she realized that they did not care for her.
Yeah. That was interesting to me as well, which I guess to their credit, they were keeping most of it behind her back and not saying it to her face.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know one thing. If I were out there on Survivor and like my tribe mates were like Will Sims, John Rocker, both of the Hanses, Abby Maria, I would still call them all by their given names at the bare minimum. And this was the thing that drove me the craziest.
Yes.
Like the thing that I thought was the most upsetting, kind of the most dehumanizing, was watching Jason completely refuse to acknowledge her identity.
Mm-hmm.
Like I thought that was really, like it seems like such a small thing,
yeah,
but it's really not. When you think about it, it's like he won't even bother. He decided on day one she was not a person worth getting to know, and to that end, he wasn't even going to get to know her name.
You're right. I do think that that is a thing. And I know I've certainly done it where it's like, you know, you just sort of like give a person a nickname and you sort of are just like referring to that person only by their nickname. And it does in some way make you feel like it is a way of disrespecting, even though it could be like a really hilarious nickname that makes you and another person laugh in sort of like inside jokes. It is a way to sort of like a really like sap respect from that person.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I had a friend who dated a guy one time, and somebody pointed out that he resembled a particular celebrity, and we started referring to him by the name of the celebrity, and we couldn't stop doing it.
Now, which you could tell us the celebrity.
Okay, well, actually, it was an amalgam of two celebrities. He looked, for all the world, I swear, he looked like the love child of Conan O'Brien and Andy Richter.
Wow, well, that's entirely plausible.
It is entirely plausible. And in fact, one of my friends started referring to this guy as Condi.
Condi.
You know, portmanteau of Conan and Andy. And for the life of me, I cannot remember what this guy's actual name was. And obviously, like,
that's
my friend,
like Bloaty.
Yeah, it's a lot like Bloaty. But my friend stopped dating him and we lost touch with him. But I have no idea what this guy's real name was. And she dated him for like a year.
So it's almost like at that point, the point that you started calling that guy Condi, you almost doomed the relationship. She can't marry Condi at the point.
She cannot marry Condi. And I felt really bad about it because I also kind of didn't get to know him after that. Like, I didn't really know what the guy was like. He would show up sometimes and be like, oh yeah, it's Condi, he's here. And a couple of times we almost called him that to his face.
Yeah, and that's a big mistake. Don't
I felt really terrible about it.
Okay.
But yeah, it's one of those things like you pick a name for someone, it's not the name they have that kind of disrespects who they are.
And if the person is not in on it, then
it's worse.
Right.
Right.
Right. All right. So you really don't like how Jason called Alicia Blondie.
I really didn't like it because it was clear that it wasn't an endearing nickname.
Yeah. It's like one of those things kind of like toots also, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Or sport.
Right.
Yeah. But it's a particular strategy that I think we've seen happen before on this show where, and I don't think it's a successful strategy. I don't think it's ever worked out for anybody that's tried it, but I've seen it happen several times where basically as early as possible in the process, you want to establish a pecking order. You want to put yourself at the top of that. And so the way you do that is you start at the bottom and you pick someone out, you make that person the bottom, you know, the bottom person in the pecking order. And you just choose someone who's different for whatever reason, who doesn't quite fit in, and then you make it known to everyone else that that person is inferior, and you refuse to engage with them about anything for any reason. And this was kind of that writ large. Like, he wouldn't even call her by name.
But what do you feel like it was about her? Are you saying that it was because that she was a woman? Because it feels like that Sydney was treated, from what I saw on the show, incredibly well by Jason.
Yeah, Ron, I've never once said this had anything to do with gender. And
I just want to be very specific about what we're talking about, because I think I've heard people say that this was a bad because it was bullying. This is bad because this was misogynistic. So I just want to make sure, as somebody who is probably not great at throwing labels around, that I just want to make sure that I'm understanding everything that we're talking about.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying that there was a, you know, there could have been some element, but I honestly think if there's any element of sexism to it, it was deeply, deeply internalized and nobody had any idea that's what they were doing.
Yes. So,
really, I think the bigger issue was that she didn't really have anything in common with them and she wasn't seen as being brawny enough. I mean, she weighed, you know, 90 pounds soaking wet and, you know, she had a lip tattoo and these like giant China doll eyes. And you can kind of tell, like, everybody else, you know, they play a sport and, you know, they're on the show. Maybe they're kind of a little more strategically inclined. Although Alicia said a couple of things that made me think she's actually watched the show.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Kyle even said, or Jason, or whatever the hell his name is. What are we calling him? We're calling him Jason.
Jason.
Yes.
You can call him Brunette, I guess, if you want, or Sandy Blonde or something like that.
I'd rather not call him anything. But he said in confessionals, I don't have anything I can talk to her about.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that is for lack of trying or what, which there's been an implication maybe it was, but he decided very quickly, I have nothing to say to this person. And then he literally had nothing to say to her for the rest of the time they were out there. And it's an effective tactic as long as that person's around, because you know you're never the person getting voted off because you're not the one on the outs.
Yeah.
But and in fact, we've seen this happen more than once. Like the two examples that I can think of, this kind of day one shunning, I'm thinking of Nayanka and Kelly Bruno in Nicaragua,
mm-hmm.
where Nayanka took one look at Kelly Bruno and was like, you know, she doesn't have all her limbs. everybody's going to give her the $1 million because they're going to give her a pity vote. I don't like people that don't have all their limbs. I'm going to shun her. And then she was just a total jerk to her the whole time. And then there's also in Survivor One World, we had this kind of similar treatment of Christina Cha. Mm-hmm. It started out with Alicia and Colton just kind of deciding, well, she's not dressed the same as everybody else. She seems kind of uptight. We're just going to rail on her the whole time. And that's exactly what they did. She made it all the way to the final four, but is generally regarded as this kind of butt monkey for the entire duration of the show.
A lot to unpack there. I mean, I think that with, in the case of Kelly Bruno, I mean that Nayaka just sort of, and not necessarily always the best judge of character, the great Nayaka.
No, certainly not.
Yeah, she decided that, hey, this person is a threat to win the game for whatever reason. I almost see some logic in what she was doing, where it was like, she at least had a reason for what she was doing. I don't know necessarily that she would have any issue with somebody with one leg outside the game, but for whatever reason, she felt like that there's no way you could beat this person in the end, so we just have to get rid of her.
Yeah, and you know, there is a logic to it, but there's the way that in which you're handling that, you can do that.
Surely
a little bit differently.
You could do better. Yeah,
you don't necessarily need to be a dick to someone just because you know you're not going far with them.
Yeah, and in terms of the cha-cha thing, it's possible that there are just some not nice people that play this game.
Well, that's certainly true, and I might even argue that we've got some of those people in this particular season.
Okay.
But I think you did make a very good point that we aren't really going to know what the repercussions of this, like what kind of person is Jason? Is he just somebody that's allergic to Alicia? Or is he actually a jerk, and are we going to see him do this to someone else now that his scapegoat is gone?
Yeah, and I think that that's pretty much the crux of what, you know, I was saying last night with Steven, where it's possible like that he just did a really not nice, him and Scott were both incredibly mean to one person who just totally got under their skin. And then I think it's a different thing if they have this pattern of behavior towards other players in this game. And while that doesn't make what he did to Alicia right, I do think it's a little bit different than if he treats everybody that way or a number of people that way versus, and I know people have said that makes me an apologist for what they're doing. I'm saying that what they did was wrong, but I think that we will see if it's just that they had a problem with one person or they are the kind of guys that have that problem with lots of people.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and make a prediction.
Okay, good.
I think we're going to see it happen again, and I don't know who it will happen to, but just based on how they are reacting to America's reaction to them, like on Twitter, they were very defensive.
Yes.
And didn't back down at all.
Yes.
And if there was any element of like redemption for them, if they thought that they were at all, if they'd ever examined their behavior, they would at least be on there saying, you didn't see the whole picture. Mm-hmm. And neither one of them is disputing any version of events that they're seeing. They're just saying, yeah, she's a terrible person. And we stand by everything we said and stop jumping down our throats about it.
Yeah, I do tend to agree with you that while I have said on podcasts this week that it is within the realm of possibility that they just were like oil and water with Alicia. It was just like, for whatever reason, these two guys and Alicia were just completely not simpatico in any way. And they just fought, you know, cats and dogs for the entire time that she was in the game. I do get the sense that we will see this with other players. If I had to predict, I would make that prediction. I think you're right.
Yeah. And especially the way that Scott left things, I thought was very interesting because he had this particular, almost patronizing way of talking about the situation, especially in his voting confessional. It really struck me. He says, I hope someday you'll realize we were just trying to help you.
Mm-hmm.
By telling her that all she's good at for is cheerleading. Okay, great. It seems to me he might be one of these people, one of these sort of Dan Foley types that thinks he knows what is best for everybody
right,
by virtue of his you know, experience as a straight white male. And he's, you know, he's got this inclination to tell everybody what he thinks they should be doing. And in some part of his brain, he thinks he is helping them, but it just comes off as being a total dick to someone out of nowhere.
That comment that Scott made to Alicia about all you're good for is cheerleading. Is that word cheerleader? Is that a loaded word for you?
No, I don't think that's a loaded word for me. I've known plenty of cheerleaders who were plenty smart.
Mm-hmm. But in terms of that, did you feel like that was something that may have made people upset? The fact that he told her basically, hey, where are the people doing this challenge? The best you could be is just a cheerleader.
Yeah, I can see where people are getting offended by that. I think the interesting thing about that is that she really wasn't doing a very good job in the moment.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And that's where you could see why you would get frustrated at that moment. Also, where they're all digging and she's kicking the piles of stuff. And she's saying, hey, come on, let's just kick it with our feet. And I think at one point, even that she's kicking where either Jason or Scott is digging. So
yeah.
I can see why that would be potentially frustrating. That would not warrant the response that they gave to her, but I could see why that would be annoying.
Yeah, I could definitely see someone saying, hey, I see what you're trying to do here, but that's not working. And in fact, it's hurting us. But, you know, we also didn't see everything. They could very well have said that. And it does seem like the way that Scott perceived himself as approaching that problem. So, you know, I do see that she was probably somebody that would drive me nuts as well.
Mm-hmm.
However, I would still call her by the name she was given, and I'd still be nice to her face.
Yeah.
And these are things that, like, there's no call for the way that she was treated here. And it upsets me that people look at that and they see it as, you know, perfectly okay, like maybe even warranted, because I don't care how annoying you are, it's not warranted. It's never warranted.
So what you're saying is that the thing that you're the most upset about here is more of the scapegoating, where she is sort of the pariah of the tribe. And then because of that, she's the next person to go home. It's okay to say whatever you want to her because of her lowly status in the tribe.
Yeah, I don't think it's okay to put someone on the bottom like that and just basically crap on them for the entire time that they're in the game.
Yeah.
The funny thing is I've witnessed this in action. I mean, obviously, I've never played Survivor and never intend to. The first week of my first year of college, we had this group of, like, there were 10 girls all on one floor of our dorm, and we all kind of hung out together because those were all the people we knew. And this one girl decided she was going to try to establish that pecking order. And she picked one person out of the group and just shut them out. Like, wouldn't respond if she was asked a question and would just, like, talk over them. And this did not work with this group of people because we were all a bunch of nerds. And eventually someone just said, you know, you can't do that. That's not okay. And if you're going to do that, then, you know, you can be that person on the bottom and we'll shut you out. Mm-hmm. And it's something like that was the first thing I thought of when I was watching this all go down. Like, it's the mark of someone who doesn't feel like they can succeed unless they put somebody else down.
So in this game, which is a mean game. It is a game.
It is a mean game.
It is a game where basically somebody is always going to be the person who gets kicked out against their will, where people from all different walks of life across this country, from all different backgrounds, have to come together and make this group decision time after time of people's feelings are going to get hurt every single week. So, Jess, is there something that the show should be doing differently, or do we just have to accept that this is part of the game and we're saying that maybe we should be really trying to vet people in casting to make sure that things like this don't happen on the show, or it is what it is?
We need to reevaluate what our definition of good television is.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've now had this happen twice in the span of like a year and a half, where we've seen someone get treated really, really poorly, and had it be presented as like, this is dramatic and this is exciting. And I think there's ways to make things dramatic and exciting without like hurting someone's feelings on international television. And then you know, it opens the door to glorify it a little bit, and there's no further context for it.
Like, but who honestly, do you think is glorifying this?
I think production is really excited to see anybody scream at conflict. Each other. Yeah, they want any kind of conflict they can get. And I think there's better kinds of conflict than just like piling onto somebody.
So are you saying that they should figure out a way to be able to do Survivor? But that's, I just don't know how you remove
I don't
this.
Think you can, not entirely, but yeah. I think you can maybe choose not to reward it. Like, they have hours and hours of footage. We don't need to lovingly linger on, you know, we could tell the story differently. We mm-hmm. don't need to lovingly linger on every single instance where, you know, somebody said they couldn't stand somebody.
Especially this moment, which took place in the heat of battle, where we're sort of like literally 50 minutes into a grueling challenge, baking in the sun. We're seeing people at their absolute lowest. I just don't know how you could ever do anything to change this sort of thing from ever happening in a scenario where you have such a clear-cut pecking order. It's terrible to see. I don't know how we do this different and then have it still be the same game of Survivor.
Again, Rob, this is not the only kind of conflict there is. Mm-hmm. This is something that could certainly have been downplayed in favor of something else that happened, you know.
So you're saying is that the show shouldn't show these things if they come up?
I think the show can be a little more delicate with how it presents these things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, honestly, yeah, Survivor's a mean game and people are going to be nasty to each other, especially because you're stressing them out. People under stress annoy each other harder. People under stress yell at each other more. But I think they could have, and maybe I'm going to feel differently, like maybe Jason and Scott get their comeuppance somehow. Mm-hmm. Like, it'd be really cool then. I don't know, cool is not the word, but it'd be great if they learned from their experiences, and they clearly haven't.
Yeah.
Like, if in the next episode, one of them gets voted out because everybody's like, yeah, we don't need that kind of negativity.
Right.
We don't need you to bully our people. That'd be fantastic. Like, put him, you know, in the tribe swap, put him with somebody like Aubrey and Neil, who are kind of quirky and they're going to get under his skin. He's going to try to bully him. What if it doesn't work this time?
And one of the things I had said in the podcast with Aris is that I do believe that the game eventually polices itself, where if you behave in this way, you will not win the game. And I feel like that if you have this sort of bad behavior, the jury will not vote for you. Like a Will Sims, you might make it to the final three, but eventually you are going to get eviscerated in front of the jury. And also Shireen will do what she can to make sure you don't get your letter. So while Alicia is gone, if this behavior was to continue, it will result in both of these men losing the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that I did observe. I can think of about five or six separate instances where I've seen someone actively bully another survivor. None of these people ever win.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, a lot of them go out fairly early.
Right. I feel like it's usually a precursor to a person who is going to lose the game. And if not soon, then eventually get their comeuppance in the game. And I don't mind, as a person who is a longtime viewer of this show, that I don't mind necessarily that we have unsavory characters who appear on the show at times. And I like the story of eventually them getting their comeuppance.
Yeah, I don't mind it. I just wish that there was a way to make it feel a little less toxic.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's maybe where the gender thing comes in, because of all the people I can think of who were on the wrong end of this, with one exception I can think of, almost all of them are women.
Yes.
And that's, I think, partly down to casting. And I will give Alicia this much. She tried to stick up for herself.
Yes. She does not take lip from anybody, as Jeff Probst pointed out.
Nope.
Okay.
And, you know, the same thing for Shireen, where, you know, she spoke up about it and she was very clear that she's not going to accept being treated that way. And I really respect when they show that, because that's not historically been the case either.
Okay. Well, Jess, this is a great segue into our first voicemail. This is from...
Oh, right. Voicemails.
Anna, who has a question.
Hey, Rob and Jess, it's Anna from Seattle. While I was watching Jason and Scott's interactions with Alicia during the episode, I couldn't help but be reminded of Dan Foley's treatment of Shireen. With bullying of female survivors in both of the most recent all-new player seasons, this is setting a distressing trend. Has this been a major storyline in other seasons? Especially with all the backlash during Worlds Apart, why is Survivor still casting people who behave this way and making it a major part of the season's story arc? Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
Okay, just to address the casting issue, while I knew that the Worlds Apart season had been filmed, I don't know if they realized the backlash that was going to come from the Shireen incident, because I believe that this season was already underway filming, and this moment may have already transpired by the time that moment between Shireen and Will aired on TV.
Yeah, I think you're right about the time frame on that.
That being said, Jess, so...
That being said, this is not the first time it's happened.
It's not the first time that it happened. In terms of the differences between this and the Will and Shireen incident, I do think that there is a difference between those two events in that Will's attack on Shireen, I feel like, was much more deeply personal than this was, where I felt like that Will was attacking Shireen as a person in terms of, you have no soul. No, this is why nobody loves you. I felt like those insults were probably more of a deep cut than all you could do is cheerlead for us on a more deeply personal nature. And I also think that the impact they had on Shireen was, she was completely devastated. Alicia, while she was, I think, hurt, she was still continuing to fire back with them.
Yeah, I mean, give Alicia some credit for always having the presence of mind. Like, maybe we just didn't see it, because I'm told that everybody cries on Survivor at some point, but she seemed to keep a pretty cool head about all of it. And I thought that was really good to see, because it made me feel like they weren't really destroying her, where, you know, Will's takedown of Shireen really felt like,
right,
it was, you know, one of the worst moments of her life. Like, Alicia's going to be fine. Her life is fine. She's going to go pose with some more sedated tigers and...
Right. Whereas I spoke with Alicia this morning. She did not seem completely destroyed, right, about it in the same way that Shireen seemed about it. I can't compare. I'm just saying, based on my observations, it seemed as though the attack from Will, the verbal attack from Will to Shireen, seemed like it was much more devastating than what those guys, and I disavow everything that they said to Alicia. It just seemed like the level of impact seemed like it was vastly greater in terms of Will to Shireen than to these guys to Alicia.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I'd be way more fired up about it if that had been the case. But, you know, it's also, the season's still young. If we see him do something else, who knows where they're going to take it or what they're going to do with it. But we can't judge the season on things that haven't happened yet.
Okay.
Yeah, this is something that's happened a lot in the past. And there's another previous season I want to harken back to.
Yes.
Right here, because this was the moment I remember very distinctly sitting in front of the Survivor and saying, I know I will never, ever go on this show. And I don't know why I ever wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Survivor Token Chains.
Yes.
And it was specifically, there were several people involved at this. The main instigator to me seemed like your friend Tyson.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that he treated Sierra, I've never understood it to this day. And I've heard you ask him about it on several of his many podcast appearances. I still don't have a satisfactory answer of what exactly it was about her that made everybody treat her this way. But it seemed very reminiscent of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a moment where I'm thinking, like, if people can just totally pile onto someone like that with what appears to be no provocation, and there's even like the remotest chance that I could be that person, I don't want anything to do with this show.
Yeah.
Like, I will sit at home and watch it happen to other people.
So in terms of that story of Sierra and this story, and again, when we talk about, like, okay, well, that the game polices itself and Tyson does come back and win, I do think that Tyson learns a lot from that incident.
Yeah, very true.
And I think we've actually talked about this on the podcast, so that he's like, yeah, why was I doing that? That doesn't make any sense in terms of this game. That's not helping me. It's hurting me in terms of the game. So it did turn into a growth moment for him. I'm not sure if Scott and Jason are also learning from this moment happening. It doesn't seem like it.
Yeah, by all accounts, they're not. And that's the reason that I can listen to Tyson on your podcast. And that's why he seems like an okay guy to me now, because he does seem to have realized that he didn't come off well.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, Scott tweeted last night that he has two daughters as well, and he hopes they don't turn out like Alicia.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the difference, I think. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right. It was a growth arc. It was a moment for Tyson where he realized something about himself.
Okay. Just anything else about this incident that you feel like that we have not talked about?
I think we've covered this as well as I want to cover it. Like, I'm going to get enough hate mail for this. So we can probably change the subject.
All right.
Now.
So maybe on Friday when we do the Amazing Race, we can maybe come on early for like 10 minutes and commiserate about all of the hate mail we're getting.
Yeah. I got my hand on the block button, guys. Okay. Come at me.
Let me just reiterate one last time.
Mm-hmm.
What Jason and Scott did to Alicia and said to Alicia was wrong. There is no place for that in Survivor. They should not say those things to her or anybody because it's not right. Okay.
Yeah, it's not okay in life either.
It's not okay in life. Just
certain things are okay on Survivor that are not okay in life. And this is one of those things that's never okay.
All right. Okay. I just want to make sure we're abundantly clear on that.
Yes.
And then we will see moving forward if Jason and Scott do this with anybody else. Because we really won't like it either then.
Nope.
Okay.
Going to disavow it then too.
We'll also disavow it there as well. And yep. While Alicia could have been possibly not fun to live with, it doesn't mean that was okay to say that to her.
I mean, I want to point out there's plenty of people that lived on the beach with Sierra Reid and did not treat her the way that Tyson and his people did.
Right.
And, you know, plenty of people lasted a long time with Abby Maria and did not treat her that way either.
That's right. That's right. Okay.
So it's not an excuse.
Right. Disavow. All right.
Disavow.
So let's take another message about maybe something else that could have been learned from this episode. Let's go to Dylan, who wants to know what maybe production learned from this week's episode.
Hey, Rob. Dylan from Alberta calling. Anyways, I'm disappointed. My favorite Survivor duo ever, broken up over a challenge that means nothing. It was just for freaking coffee. And you have a final act where everybody from Scott and Jason to the editors, Stephen Probst himself, decide to not even try. Anyways, my question for you is, what did production learn from this episode? And can you think of anything in season 31 that was maybe affected by what we saw tonight? Thanks for all you do.
Okay. Jess, do you think that production took any lessons away from this whole incident and three people going down in this medevac challenge?
Well, I think you've heard it. I think you've heard a lot of anecdotes to this point from your friend Steven.
Mm-hmm.
He has pointed out that when they were out there, production was a lot more careful about making sure they were getting enough water and about monitoring the weather and keeping a close watch on everybody. And I think it shows they seemed a little bit better cared for on the Second Chance season than they did in this one.
Yeah. I wonder also maybe if they might consider after something like this, where you have a day, again, according to Beast Mode Cowboy in my exit interview with him, he claimed that Jeff said it was the hottest day they ever had on Survivor and it was 120 degrees. I wonder on that scenario if they might say in the future, okay, let's wait until it's, because it's a reward challenge. You don't need to go to tribal council after. Could you potentially wait to do it later in the day? Could you do it first thing in the morning so you're not where the sun is really at its highest point in the sky? So maybe also time of day could also be an issue. You know, you probably want to have the right time with the lighting because you're not going to be able to light the challenge if you do it too late. But I think that maybe you could also look at that sort of thing as well.
Yeah, and it does seem like they vary up the time of day they do it. So, you know, as long as it's not cutting into Jeff Probst's beauty rest, why not?
Jess, should part of each Survivor challenge, much like you had the ability to go and search for the idol during a challenge, should there be a Gatorade station in the challenge where teams can stop doing their challenge, go to get Gatorade, but it would slow them down and increase the odds that they lose the challenge?
Well, this is sort of like the age old, you know, comfort, or it's like the challenge where you can eat or compete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or it's like Sugar and Gabon with her like bowl of fruit.
Right. Right.
This seems like something that we've had a lot of, but I also think there's no reason not to hydrate them a little bit better. It's still going to be pretty miserable. Mm-hmm. They're still going to get parasites. Their hair is still going to fall out. They're still going to be filthy and covered in bug bites, but maybe they won't almost die.
I do. I like this idea of the Gatorade station. So you get thing of Gatorade in the middle, but it comes out of like very slow. It's like one of these things where it's like the little like a spigot. Is that what it's called? Where the water, like it drains like extremely slow, almost like a keg that needs to get pumped. And it comes out very, very slow. And you could sit there with like, and it's like a little tiny Dixie paper cup. And you could sort of fill it up and get that. But you'd really lose a lot of time. We're like, Debbie's going for the Gatorade. Oh, my God.
Gatorade shooters.
Gatorade shot glass.
So one other question, though. Like, when you win the challenge, are you allowed to pick up the Gatorade keg and dump it on the heads of your teammates?
That's on day 39. On day 39, the jury will then dump the Gatorade on the winner.
Okay.
It would be, you know, you would know who won then, but, you know, what are you going to do? All right.
All right.
All right. Let's take a question now from Lindsay from Ottawa. We have so many Canadian voicemails. We love hearing from the Canadians on the voicemail show at any time. Here is 2623, which is from Lindsay. Lindsay.
Hey, Rob and Jess. It's Lindsay in Ottawa. My question is about returning players. So I think we're all in agreement that Caleb is going to be brought back almost immediately. What do you think about Alicia? Of course, I think she was treated badly by the guys on her tribe.
Disavow.
But I also didn't really see a lot from her that made me think that she's a great player who I would necessarily want to see come back. But is it possible, because she's engendering so much goodwill right now and people are really rooting for her and she's the underdog, that she'll be more likely to be brought back? Let me know what you think. Bye.
Okay. Lots of goodwill for Leashy Leash. People are really digging her right now. Jess, is it possible? Could we see Alicia brought back?
I am going to say no. And the reason is, I don't think she's got the Wentworth factor. Like, namely, I don't think she cares passionately about going back.
Mm.
Like she said, I would love to do it again sometime. But when you bring back a pre-merge booth, there has to be some really huge extenuating circumstance to make you even consider bringing them back. Whether it is that they went out in a really bad way, or they had a really major conflict with somebody that they're definitely bringing back and they want to see that happen again, as in Francesca and Philip,
mm-hmm.
or they take it on themselves to get themselves put back on, as we saw Kelly do.
I don't think that Alicia is going to be taking that initiative the a la Kelly Wentworth route. But going back to the Francesca and Philip thing, is it possible that if Jason was to return to the show, could she potentially get brought back to sort of be a thorn in his side, as we expect was the case with Francesca and Philip?
Well, that is a big if, Rob. And here's the thing. Like, I know you are not with me on this. I don't think Jason is a tremendously great character. I do not find him casting gold.
Okay.
Like, he's kind of a douche and he's kind of remarkable looking, but I have not seen this great, memorable character. Like, from what we've seen right now, if I was going to choose somebody to be asked back from this season, it would not be him. And
hear me out. Do you think he's interesting?
I don't think he's all that interesting. In fact, I think he's very one note so far, and that may change over time. I think it depends a lot on how far he goes and how he goes out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I am open to the possibility that he's going to become more interesting, but so far, all we've really seen him do is kind of self-aggrandize and put down others. And that, to me, doesn't make compelling television. Mm. Like, he's not a specialist by any means. let him get a little more eccentric. I'm open to it. But right now, I don't see him being the kind of person that they're sitting there going, we definitely have to get him back. Not the way we've seen other big characters.
If Jason was to get blindsided with an idol in his pocket, if he went out in some way where then he got blindsided, idol in his pocket, out of the game, I mean, would that be some sort of compelling payoff for you?
That'd be a pretty good payoff. That's a start.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be kind of cool, I think, if something in what we've seen from him so far ends up contributing to his downfall.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if it somehow gets out, like, what the pecking order was on this tribe and people really aren't having it, that would be interesting, too.
So
I could certainly see a scenario where Sydney turns on him, for instance.
Yeah, I think that'd that would be very interesting. Interesting TV to watch. I mean,
but in that case, if you bring him back, you're not bringing Alicia back. You're bringing Sydney back.
Right.
Right.
I just feel like that at the point where Survivor is 18 of the greatest people that you ever want to hang out with, all the nicest people that you can find, I think that that is a less interesting show than having people in there who are unlikable and are your villains on the show. And I know that people are very upset with the things that him and Scott had done in this previous episode, and I do not agree with those things, but I think that having people that are going to be unsavory is enticing when you're casting a TV show.
I think there's different kinds of villainy. Mm-hmm. I think there's just being a douche all around because you think that's what the public wants. Like, you know, the Hance factor. But I would say that I don't think Jason even has like a Russell Hance kind of strategy mind. And the kind of villains I want to see are the kind of people that are a little bit sneakier about how they go about things. Like, I would rather see Rob Sesternino villains than Kyle Jason villains.
Yeah, I feel like the book is not yet written on him.
And I would even like to see like a loose cannon villain. Like, I'd rather see a coach out there than a Kyle. Mm. But you're right. We got to see how it plays out before you make the final call.
Just to go back to, this wasn't a question about should Jason get brought back a second time?
Right.
Should Alicia get brought back a second time? All right. Is Alicia going back second time? Yes or no, Jess?
No. I don't see it happening.
I'd say probably not, even though it would be fun to see. Who's not a fan of Leashy Leash? Let's take another question. This is from Kyle. He has a question about former RHAP blogger Nick.
Hey, Rob and Jess. So former RHAP blogger Nick has made it this far without getting voted out, despite the fact that he's been on the bottom of the beauty tribe. They just haven't gone to tribal council yet. So how do you think he's going to position now at a swap? How far do you think he can go at this point?
Jess, what's your take on Nick so far?
Well, I'm not entirely sure that Nick is an actual human being. Like, he might be just like a really advanced AI.
Yes.
Like, in a very realistic suit.
Yes. I believe that you cannot spell Majorano without AI.
It's true. It's true. And he might have been, this might be a long con, like he might have been an AI when he was writing your blogs.
Very possible.
But, yeah, I think he's been on a strong tribe. And that's been more or less his saving grace. I'm really excited to see what happens in a tribe swap. But I do think he is the kind of person that I think it's harder for him in a smaller tribe than it will be in a bigger tribe. Like, in a bigger tribe, he can kind of hide his pathologies a little bit more. Like, in a bigger tribe, you only have to have one person who's more annoying than you are. And he's not, frankly, all that annoying. He just happened to be, you know, the least engaging person on a tribe full of really charming people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the tribe swap is probably going to be a very good thing for him. But I don't think he's got potential to go deep into the game.
Do you think that he could potentially link up with the Braun tribe?
I could see that happening, especially if he finds out that he was on the outs in beauty. He may jump ship on his beauty tribe mates and go along with a smaller faction like the Braun tribe.
Do you think that Nick feels like he's on the ropes?
I don't think he does. I don't think he has any idea at this point.
Yeah.
It all depends on whether he finds out.
That's more of a thing from the secret scenes, I feel like, that we have not heard him talking about, of like, you don't see secret scenes of him. It's like, hey, I'm really in trouble. I think that, you know, he's been sort of not talking about his position in a negative way too much in secret scenes.
No, he thinks he's running the game.
Yeah.
I think the most dangerous person for him right now is probably Dr. Obama. Because he and Peter are the same type of player. They both want to be running the game at all times, and they think they're smarter than everybody else. And if you put the two of them on a tribe together, they're going to target each other.
Could they link up, maybe?
Maybe, but neither one of them is going to like being second banana. Like, nobody wants to be the Joe Biden in this situation.
Could Joe be the Joe Biden in this situation?
Joe would be an excellent Joe Biden in this situation.
He would be good. He would be very good. Yeah, I'm worried about Nick, but I think that maybe for him and Peter are in the same boat. And I think that we will know, I think, probably 10 minutes into this week's episode, what their fate is going to be.
I think it all depends on how these tribes shake out. And I'm very excited to see them all talk to each other, because talking within their tribes, like, I feel like I know how these people interact with each other, and I'm getting kind of bored with it.
Let's take a question from our good buddy Syrup Guy, who has a question about Jeff's handling of all of the medevacs last night. Here is Syrup Guy.
Well, that's a sticky situation.
What's up, Rob and Jessica? Syrup Guy calling in. My question is about Jeff and how he handled this whole evacuation. It seemed at first he was doing good. He was doing his over-touchy brand enhance thing where he was rubbing Caleb's head quite a bit, but other than that, doing pretty good. Except then when he went over to kind of reveal what happened to Caleb's tribe, he went over there and I forget exactly how he said it, but something to the effect of, great news, Debbie and Cindy are going to be okay. Oh yeah, but Caleb, yeah, he's out of here. We're taking him out. And it just seemed kind of douchey. Like, they all were shocked, and they're like, Ty starts bawling and stuff, but just the way he said it, it was kind of like the after story. Love to hear you guys' thoughts.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you, Syrup Guy. Jess, did you have any issue with Jeff's bedside manner? Here is the clip of him breaking the news.
All right, so obviously a crazy day. Are you guys doing okay?
I don't know. It's just overwhelming.
Yeah. Okay.
So far, so good, right?
Okay. Well, here's the good news. Sydney's fine. Debbie's fine. We are going to evacuate Caleb.
Yeah, I do feel like that was probably not the right way to sort of set that up to the beauty tribe. Okay, here's the good news. All the people that aren't on your tribe, they're fine. The guy that is on your tribe, you know, where he's gone, we're taking him out. We're removing him from the game.
Yeah, everyone who's getting your tribe mate back, take one step forward. Not so fast, beauty tribe.
Right. Maybe, I don't know if I would have framed it as a, you want the good news first or the bad news?
This is actually one of the more compassionate times that we've seen Jeff Probst handle a situation. Like, he's been a lot worse in the past. I think his bedside manner, if you can believe it, has improved over the years.
Now, there's a lot going on. We're cutting Jeff a lot of slack in that moment because incredibly stressful situation, very scary situation, which Jeff handled beautifully, but maybe I just wouldn't go good news, bad news in that spot.
Yeah, that seems like, and it seems like you want to give a little more weight to the Caleb thing.
It's right.
Like, yeah, this was very serious. He almost died.
Mm-hmm.
He is in a coma and we've had to pull him from the game.
Right.
I think is a better way of phrasing that than everyone else is okay and we took Caleb away. Because I don't think you even get the sense they're not sure how serious it is in that moment.
Jess, let's take another voicemail. This one is from another one of our Canadian listeners, Mike from The Brick.
Hi, Rob and Jessica. This is Mike Bell from The Brick. It's inevitable that Caleb will be at best back to Survivor after last night's episode. Hypothetically, if he gets two calls this summer, one for Survivor Second Chance 2 or Big Brother 18, which offer should he take?
Okay, thanks to Mike from The Brick. He's huge in Canada. Everybody knows who he is. Jess, so which do you think Beast Mode Cowboy should take? Which offer should he take if he's invited to both Big Brother All-Stars and Survivor? I asked him this morning. He told me Survivor. Do you think that that would be the right path as opposed to returning to Big Brother All-Stars?
I think that's the right path for him.
Survivor?
Survivor is the right path. And mainly because he's got the passion for it. And also he knows, kind of like having read about his experiences, mm-hmm. I think both he and production have learned some lessons that will help him do better next time.
Yeah, what lessons would those be?
I mean, he had been doing competitive bodybuilding right before he went out on Survivor, and he didn't get very much advance notice before he was cast. And I think at this point he knows, like, if he had confirmation he was going back out there, he would have time to build up some more body fat,
mm-hmm.
which would be more helpful for him. I think he'd be able to train for it.
Now, where are you getting this from, Jess?
I read this. I believe he told Josh this.
Oh, they got into body fat composition.
According to Caleb in his exit interview with Josh Wiggler, the doctor told Caleb, "I've never seen this in my life. I'm going to be honest with you. You didn't have the muscle you had on your body. You would be dead. Your muscles were holding enough water to get you by. So it's good that you're fit and in shape and healthy. Thank God you had that significant amount of muscle or you would have been gone."
A little bit of a humble brag, no?
A little bit. but I think he was having a lot of trouble precisely because he had all that muscle, but he didn't have a lot of fat. And I think if he was going back out there again, he would know to build up a little more body fat before he went out, and he might train a little bit differently.
He could die with that fat.
He could die. But, you know, we're all going to die someday, and he's also not going to be out. Survivor is going to take a step back from this season, and they're going to look at what they put their people through. And the next one's going to be harsh, but it's going to be not as harsh. Like, look at, for example, compare Survivor Africa to Survivor Marquesas. Mm-hmm. Like, Marquesas was tough. People had a hard time. They still starved. They still got bug bites. They still had annoying things happen to them. But nobody collapsed and had to be given an IV before they got put back in the game. Nobody had diarrhea for an entire year.
I think Pascal did collapse by the time after he got voted out.
He did, yeah. After he got voted out.
Yeah. He was the Liz Markham of Survivor Marquesas.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It was nowhere near as hard. And I think wherever Survivor chooses to go next, it's not going to be as punishing as Cambodia. It'll mm-hmm. still be a little punishing, but I think they're going to ease up a little bit. And so if they're having a returnee season, like maybe the one after the next one or even the next one, and they call Caleb, he's going to be better prepared and it's not going to be as completely punishing on him.
Okay. Let's take a question from our buddy Miles Nye.
Hi, Rob and Jessica. The last two seasons have both featured the untimely removal of a bright, strong, promising player who, over the course of the few episodes he was in, really couldn't say a negative thing about him. Rather than wait for that to happen again and then bring the three of them back for a Philippines-style tribe season, I have a counterproposal. What do you think about Survivor Deets Mode Cowboy? Bring back Caleb and Terry, let them captain two tribes, take a crack at each other. What do you think, brochachos? Going to Samoa or Hell Noah?
All right. Survivor Deets Mode Cowboy.
Deets, big and long.
Yeah. What's up, brochacho?
Honestly, just for the drops, I would put that in Samoa.
Yeah. I don't know how necessarily, other than to say, well, Terry left Survivor early and so did Beast Mode Cowboy. They're the captains of a new tribe.
It was, I even thought the Scoop and Swan Penner thing was kind of a stretch.
Yeah.
And I hate those seasons where it's one returnee on a tribe. Like, make it all returnees or no returnees.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think that there's a lot of legs for Deets Mode Cowboy.
But if you want to bring them both back for a returnee season and put them on the same tribe and hope that they form a bromance and call that bromance Deets Mode Cowboy, then I'm on board.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah. Just let them both come back in a season with other returnees. We don't have to build a season around there. Not enough juice there.
There's no there.
Okay, let's take a call from Eric.
Hi, Rod and Jess. It's Eric Corbidge calling from Maryland. I wanted to talk a little bit about the edit, and specifically talking about Jason's edit. Last night on the Know-It-Alls, Rob, you and Steven talked a lot about Jason's edit and whether it's a winner's edit or whether it isn't. But I feel like we're limiting ourselves by only talking about a winner's edit. Seems like what we're seeing with Jason might be the dawn of something completely different. We have someone who's clearly integral to the story, as we keep seeing his defense of his treatment of Alicia and his justifications for the things he does. So we don't know quite yet if he's going to win, but it seems clear that he's a major, major, major part of the conclusion of the story. So are we seeing the dawning of the Sinner's edit? All right, thanks, guys. Can't wait to hear your thoughts. Bye.
Jess, is this the beginning of the Sinner edit?
The Sinner edit. You know, honestly, I don't think this is any... I haven't seen anything in this edit that makes me think we're getting a different story from how these things usually go.
You don't feel like he's on track to be in the final three as like Steven does?
It's possible he makes the final three, but I think with the number of strong personalities that are left, I don't think anybody lets him get that far. I think he pisses someone off earlier than that. And he's been pretty unpleasant. He hasn't been unpleasant enough to paint himself as a goat this early. I could see him making the final three and getting shut out. It could be one of those situations. But I think we call that the Hans edit.
Okay. Let's take a question from our buddy Mikey the Chimp.
Who's that blonde girl on the Beauty Tribe?
Hey, you watch it, Mikey the Chimp. Jeff Varner was right about you, Mikey the Chimp. Who's that blonde girl on Beauty? At least he didn't call her Blondie.
Yeah. Thank you, Rob, for not calling me Blondie.
Yes. Yeah, I don't think I've ever called anybody Blondie.
Good, good. That makes you somebody I like better than Kyle Jason.
In fact, I'll even say that I think a blondie is inferior to a brownie. I'm of course talking about baked goods only.
Yeah, I got that. You know, a blondie made correctly is pretty tasty.
Yeah. I don't hate it. I'm just saying I'll take the brownie over the blondie.
Yeah, I think most people would.
Shortest voicemail in the history of RHAP. Congratulations to Mikey the Chimp there.
That's a record that'll stand for a while.
Yeah, 2 seconds. All right. Let's take a question from Sean in San Diego. Wants to talk about Debbie.
What's up, Rob? Sean Kong from San Diego. I know you're probably not ready to admit it yet, but Debbie has a serious winner's edit going on. She's gained a lot better footing within her tribe. She's talked about being a mastermind, and she was given that extended confessional talking about how she wants to be strong for her daughter. Is Nicole on the verge of a three-peat? Did she will Debbie back to life? Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
I guess you would have to call me the mastermind.
Yeah, is that Debbie or Nicole talking? Yeah, Nicole, when Aris was here, she was like, so, you see, my Debbie is looking good. That's going to be 3 in a row. That I was like, all right, can you just calm down here for a second? It's the 4th episode. Don't count your Debbies before they hatch.
Yeah, although I got to say, Debbie is impressing me a lot more than I thought she would. I thought she was just going to be like a crazy old bat.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, that's what she's trying to project, but she's really brought some interesting insights to the game. And
total blindside.
This is blindside.
Yeah, she's weird. But she, what's funny is we usually have a weirdo on a season of Survivor. And that person generally has no social skills and no idea what's going on at any point in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time I think we've had a total weirdo who also has her finger on the pulse.
Yeah. She's doing a good job so far.
I love it.
She's doing a great job, and I think that she is turning out to be a good pick. But again, Nicole is really already celebrating. She's really like, you know, this is a lot of Survivor left to be played.
Yeah, I think celebrating now is a little premature.
Okay.
But
Jess, if you had the choice to go with either Nicole's winner pick at this point, or Rob's winner pick, which was Anna, where would you go?
I actually put Anna on my... The RHAP bloggers have a fantasy league, and I actually picked Anna for mine.
Okay.
And she was my first round pick. So that should tell you.
Rob's the best. Know-it-all. The amount of Survivor podcast he does is not small because Rob's the best. Know-it-all. And newborn baby sleep won't affect him at all because Rob's the best. Know it all. And winning podcast awards are way better than winning the title of Soul Survivor. Sure.
Hey, watch it. Shut up, Tim.
You know,
they don't call him Shut Up Tim for nothing.
That's beautifully rendered. But 2 points.
Yes.
To the first point, Nicole doesn't have her own know it all music, which is a shame.
Oh, really?
Nicole's the best. Know it all. Because picking the season's winner, she'll make that call. Because Nicole's the best. Know it all. The evolution of strategy, she probably wrote them all. Because Nicole's the best.
Right.
Know it all. And she's totally right. Pineapple pizza tastes like garbage.
All right.
All right. Okay, yeah, I have heard that before.
Just stand corrected.
I stand corrected. But to the second point, I don't think Anna can win. Because we barely see Anna. She has not gotten what our friend Stephen Fishback would call a winner's edit.
But you have Ty, who is just an airtime-sucking vacuum in that tribe, and Beast Mode Cowboy, and they've never been to Tribal Council yet.
Yeah, but we would still find a way to see her reacting to him if she was going to win the season.
Yeah.
She would have something to do.
I don't think the ship has sailed yet. I think that there's still a possibility, especially when we have not seen her tribe once yet go to Tribal Council.
All right. Well, we'll see. I like her so far, what we have seen of her. I think she's very intelligent. She's in a very good position. But, you know, I would like to get to know her a lot better before I say she can win the game.
Okay, I'm not closing the book yet. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Let's take a question from Brian from Kentucky, home state of Beast Mode Cowboy. He has a question about Beast Mode Cowboy.
Hey, Rob. Brian from Kentucky here. Can you think of any comparisons to Caleb's story in which on Big Brother, nobody really cared for him that much.
How dare you?
I mean, he wasn't the worst, but as far as being fans, not that much. But now on Survivor, he comes in, he does a great job, he gets a great edit, and suddenly I find myself rooting for him, and I'm ready to see him come back and play again. Can you think of anything similar to that? Thanks, Rob.
Okay. Jess, Brian says that Beast Mode Cowboy, he was not the worst on Big Brother.
Who wants to shine bright like a Frankie?
And then he comes to Survivor, and now everybody is really loving Beast Mode Cowboy. Does any other cross show, crossover star on CBS reality, does anybody have a similar arc?
You know, that's a good question. I don't watch a whole lot of Big Brother. And in fact, the last time I tried to get into Big Brother, the antics of a certain guy that looks a lot like the guy that got medevaced this week ended up driving me to stop watching.
I don't know what you're talking about, Jess.
Yeah, it was all a crazy fever dream from 2 summers
ago. It was all a dream.
Ago.
You dreamt that.
Yeah, I dreamt that he was a total jerk to
watch it.
This is all the fan fiction I'm writing in my head, apparently.
Yes.
But
I'll have none of that, Jess.
And it's interesting because the guy that everybody hated that season.
Who wants to shine bright like a Frankie?
I think he's speaking words there, but I'm not entirely sure.
Okay. All right, Jess, though. So would you say, what about the arc of the great 2015 Miss Survivor, Natalie Anderson? Would you say that that was at all similar?
Well, I think the 20s were a beloved institution on The Amazing Race, although they had a really terrible second time out there.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if that was your first exposure to the 20s and then you saw them on San Juan del Sur, you might feel like they turned it around, but I don't think it was that drastic.
Yeah. There haven't been a lot of people that have gone from show to show that have had sort of like a negative reputation with the fans. And again, I think that it was a mixed bag with Caleb the first time around. I think that he certainly did have his fans, and then he also had his detractors, where now it appears that universally he only has fans and his detractors are few and far between. I don't know if there's another person like that that we have seen go from show to show. I think that we have seen people that have been kind of villains on their show up on The Amazing Race, but they have not become beloved figures on The Amazing Race. You might be able to argue that Brendan and Rachel, where they were, again, and they went on after their second time when Rachel actually won the show, when they appeared on The Amazing Race. I'm not sure that they were really either villains or heroes on The Amazing Race. I think that there were teams on that Amazing Race 20 that were definitely the villains and not Brendan and Rachel. And then I think that they became more fan favorites by the second time they ran the race. What's your take on Brenchel going to The Amazing Race?
I feel like Brenchel has got to be about as polarizing on The Amazing Race as they were on Big Brother.
Mm-hmm.
Like some people find them immensely entertaining and some people can't stand them.
Yes.
And, you know, you and I are kind of in the entertaining camp, but we also, you know, the season that we covered together with Brenchel in it, we had a lot of people saying, please get Brenchel off my screen immediately. And I get the sense that was kind of the same attitude that people carried on to Big Brother.
Yeah.
So I would say Brenchel on Amazing Race and Brenchel on Big Brother are clearly the same characters.
Yeah, typically they won't bring somebody onto another show unless they are already a fan favorite from the other show. I mean, you do have the curious case of Whitney and Keith on The Amazing Race, and they became beloved Amazing Race stars back in Amazing Race 25, right?
Yeah, they sure did. It's interesting. Usually you cast somebody from one show on another show because you think you know what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And you aren't looking for someone to do a complete 180.
Mm-hmm. And in the case of Jeff and Jackie on Big Brother this season, we still don't understand what happened there.
I don't understand it myself. I think it was more like, I can't even begin to speculate.
No, nobody can. We still don't know. Okay. Let's take a question about The Amazing Race for Jess. This is from Sean from Utah.
Hey, Rob. This is Sean calling from Utah. Longtime caller, first time listener.
My question is about the ill-fated Beast Cowboy. Now, it's pretty much confirmed at this point that he's going to get another chance at Survivor. But what do you think about Ty and Caleb on The Amazing Race? Do you think that Caleb could be the first person to pull off the CBS trifecta? Love to hear your guys' thoughts.
Okay, Jess. What do you think right now of the Beast Mode Cowboy and Ty pairing on The Amazing Race? Is Caleb now set up to be the first person to pull off the never-before-done feat, the CBS slam of Amazing Race, Survivor, and Big Brother?
You know, I think he's the strongest Triple Crown contender we've had since Hayden Moss.
See, I would have said yes, but I'm going to say...
No!
Yes. I don't think that he is positioned now because based on last night's show, it seems as though that Caleb, Beast Mode Cowboy, is being positioned for a return to Survivor. And I wonder, could that return to Survivor potentially, I mean, he could be the first boot in a Survivor season, that could seriously put the Amazing Race run in jeopardy. Amazing Race could be off the air potentially by the time that Caleb is through with the next Survivor cycle.
That is entirely true.
Yeah.
And I think I had heard rumors that he was offered Amazing Race before and turned it down.
Who is his partner going to be?
I think somebody else on his season.
Okay.
I'd heard several rumors around that season. Like I had heard Frankie was being asked to go on with several different people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it never wound up shaking out in any way that was going to work out.
But if we were going to do the power rankings of who is the most likely person to pull it off, I think that he would probably have to be number one on the list, unless you want to say that one of the twinnies maybe might be better positioned, or you think Hayden is still in the mix?
I think Hayden's still in the mix. I think the twinnies have no interest in going on Big Brother. But if they ever did, I think, assuming everybody that is asked would do it in a heartbeat, I think you got to put the twinnies in that conversation.
Any sort of possibility, like a dark horse, Jeff Schroeder showing up on a Survivor season?
I could see it happening where they put him on and they just kind of pretend that he was never on any of the other shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think he's pretty comfortable with what he's doing too.
Yeah. Is there any possibility that somebody that we're not thinking of could show up on Big Brother this summer? Like a Natalie Anderson.
That's possible. Like, or even like send a Nadia Anderson in there.
And that say it's Natalie.
Yeah, or send them both in there. Project DNA.
And then you're going to switch them?
I don't think you can manage. I don't think they can pull that off. But I also think the 20s have enough going on in their lives that they don't want to take the whole summer off to do Big Brother. And I think that's the big selling point to get people to achieve the Triple Crown. They probably have to start on Big Brother and work their way up to Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
Because Big Brother is a huge time suck and you kind of have to not have a lot going on in the first place to get on it.
One last question from the voicemail. This is from Ken.
Hey, Rob and Jess. This is Kenny from New York, and I have a question about The Amazing Race. What do you think are the chances we'll see a future Amazing Race season with Ty Trang and also Mallory, because Caleb has a medical concern like Mark and Popper and never actually makes it to the starting mat? Thanks.
Well, Caleb is Kentucky. Is there a rule that if a Kentucky Amazing Race contestant pulls out, that Mallory is the default replacement?
I think that is in the actual rule book. I think she pretty much now just kind of hangs out at the starting line every season just in case somebody can't be on.
Yeah. And how would Ty and Mallory fare compared to Mark and Mallory?
I think they'd do better than Mark and Mallory.
Hard to do worse than Mark and Mallory.
Yes, hard to do worse.
Okay. All right. Jess, here's something interesting that I actually got a medical update from one of our listeners who is a medical professional, is a nurse, wanted to clarify some of the medical things that we saw on the show last night.
Okay.
The differences between heat exhaustion and heat stroke. Are you interested in hearing this?
Yeah, I'm very interested in hearing this.
Okay. All right. So, according to our medical correspondent, who
is it, John Carroll?
It's not John Carroll. I'm not sure. That we'll just go Michelle, our medical correspondent.
Oh, okay, Michelle.
She wrote in to tell me. She asked me, do you want this information? I said, sure, let me know. All right, so here's what Michelle had to say. About Debbie and Sydney, she diagnosed that they both suffered from heat exhaustion.
Okay,
not heat stroke, as Debbie said.
Sure.
It's a less serious, non-fatal condition. Symptoms include weakness, nausea, dizziness. She noticed one shot where Cindy looked like she was going to vomit. And it's distinguished by the lack of neuro brain changes. We saw both Debbie and Sydney were able to communicate with the others throughout the event. Heat exhaustion is treated with cooling measures and hydration. Now, what happened with Caleb, she described as heat stroke, which is the true medical emergency.
Yeah, he stopped sweating.
Yes. The changes in level of consciousness also are a big symptom. There was ataxia, rapid heart rate, and a temperature greater than 40 degrees Celsius, 104 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, he said his was 105.
Yes. Caleb had most of these symptoms. They had to have Nick hold his legs up in the air. And that's what you do for somebody with very low blood pressure. When your body's overheating, your blood vessels will get bigger to allow the heat to dissipate. That's why you turn red when you're hot. In someone who's already dehydrated, it becomes a problem by causing most of the blood vessels to get big. To get rid of the heat, it will significantly drop your blood pressure even further. So lifting someone's legs up allows the blood pooled in the legs to get back to the heart and brain, and it may have helped him regain a little bit of consciousness near the end.
Okay, that's really useful information.
And also, just to show you how serious this was, some of the facts about heat stroke. Without treatment, the mortality rate, the rate of death of heat stroke is 80%.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. And the heat stroke can trigger the body to produce many clots throughout the body. The most serious situation occurs when the blood clots travel to the brain, causing a stroke, and the heart to cause a heart attack. So very scary situation. And again, speaks to the fact that when we said last night, like, I can't believe that they're not even having a chance that they're going to take him back in the game. Now we seem to understand why.
Yeah, he was pretty much out of it for several days after the fact.
Yes.
And now nobody's disputing giving Dr. Joe the fishy.
Yes, nobody's disputing that. Also, I got some information on the Liz Markham wounds that she posted. Did you watch any of those?
Hell no.
No. Oh, yeah, she was pretty.
If somebody says, look at this footage of a wound, I'm definitely not going to watch that.
Yes. Michelle says that she would classify her wounds as stage 4. You can't get any worse than this. Stage 4 wounds are so deep that they have bone, muscle, or tendons exposed. These are serious wounds.
That sounds pretty serious.
Also, Michelle adds, the plastic surgeon did a good job on her. Although she has scars, they're much better than they could have been. Okay?
Okay, and this is a good lesson for anybody that ever wants to go on Survivor.
Yeah. So there you go. So congratulations to Liz. Came away much more unscathed than she possibly could have been. Good plastic surgeon.
But I wonder if she's mad at Steven for putting her on this path in the first place.
I'd be annoyed with him. I'd be honest.
Yeah, I think I would be too.
Okay, but she doesn't seem to be. She seems still happy with Steven. High approval rating for Fishy Fishy.
Okay.
Jess, you ready to get into some Survivor social media?
Yes, please.
All right. Hit it, Ryan Elder.
Tweets, baby, tweets, Survivor tweets. They're better than having tribal right there on the beach. Tweets.
Yeah. What did you think of that tribal right there on the beach?
I thought it was very brave of Alicia to decline tribal on the beach.
Decline that exciting offer. Yeah, thank you very much to Ryan Elder. You can follow Ryan on Twitter. He's at Ryan Elder Music. All right, so we have all of Survivor tweeting, all of the Survivor alumni once again on Twitter. It's been a very big season for the alumni on Twitter. So a lot of people from this current season were tweeting. You mentioned what Scott was tweeting about the show. At Caleb Reynolds said, thank you all so much for the love and support. I love you all, fans. You will see me again. Okay. You will.
He guarantees it.
Yeah. He is not even saying that there's a question.
Well, good for him. And I did find myself clicking over to his Twitter just to make sure he wasn't dead.
He was not dead. All right. Then Dr. Peter at 47PB, he tweeted yesterday, I'm at work. Don't spoil it today. Hold on. Don't spoil the show for him?
Yeah, he kind of knows what happened, doesn't he?
We going to spoil the show for him?
Well, I guess he wants to know how it got edited down and how it's being portrayed. Like, did he look good? Were there flattering camera angles? Did he come off as a smart guy or a dumbass?
Okay.
I guess that's what passes for spoilers if you already know what happens.
I guess so. Neil Gottlieb, at Neil H. Gottlieb.
Ice cream pants.
Yes. He tweeted about Debbie, that puzzle didn't lay down for Debbie like a lover.
Oh.
Yeah, touche. Touche, Neil. Neil's got a lot to say on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm enjoying Neil on Twitter.
Our own Stephen Fishback. Boy, he was fired up. He must have tweeted about 15 times during the show.
Yeah, I saw he was, well, he's usually pretty active during the show.
Live tweeting machine. He was tweeting, Alicia, would you like to Posley? Is that the first time we've ever heard Posley as a verb?
Yeah, I think you might be right. That's a historic first.
Yeah. Steven also said, so Caleb is definitely coming back. Let this be a lesson to pre-merge boots. Pass out in dramatic fashion.
Okay. Noted.
Yeah. Duly noted. All right. Eliza, she was as usual. That her temperature might have been running 104 degrees during the episode again last night.
Yeah, I like it when Eliza gets all head up about something.
She was turnt up again, as they say. All right.
Turnt.
Eliza said, Debbie thinks she's the mastermind, and yet she's calling other people narcissists?
Yeah, really, anybody calling anybody a narcissist on this show is the pot in the kettle.
Yeah. All right. Well, we know Debbie is the mastermind.
I guess you would have to call me the mastermind.
I don't know if I have to do anything, Debbie.
Okay. Eliza, she was very upset again about this Alicia business. And how do your daughters feel seeing how you treat Alicia, Jason? You suck too.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love her.
I guess Jason is the first person that sucks. Or was Debbie?
Why do we have to rag the sucking?
Okay.
Eliza Orleans is a national treasure.
Yes. Sophie was somewhat defensive of those guys, of Jason and Scott. Sophie said, I'm Team Scott. Cheerleading is fine, but not when you're doing S-word all yourself.
Yeah, it's fair. That was pretty annoying, but I don't think it merited the snarky comment.
And Eliza said she was still trying. Scott is such a misogynist. He sucks.
Not arguing with that either.
Okay. She also said, post-challenge tribal, that's BS. No chance. I would never consent to that.
I can kind of hear it in her voice, too.
Yeah, she was really upset about that. Also, She tweeted, when Pollard won an NBA championship, he averaged less than 2 points and 2 rebounds a game, thanks to MTG Packrat for the tip on his ass.
Okay, well, we got some other information about that. And, you know, I'm not a huge NBA fan. I'm married to one. And it is true that the season that Scott Pollard got his championship ring, he rode the bench for the entirety of the championship. Mm-hmm. But that being said, he apparently, and there's a long thread about this in the Patreon group earlier. Mm-hmm. He was apparently a very valuable teammate off the court.
Yes.
And this is really interesting to me, like the way that he helped make the active players a lot better.
How so?
In practice, he was able to participate fully in practice and put up enough of a challenge that they were able to go up against the other team that they beat and take that championship. And I think this is very interesting and a lot of credit to Scott, but it also makes his comments to Alicia even more ironic.
Yes.
Because Alicia points out, I've played on a team before and I know that you have to be supportive of everybody on your team. And for him to come back at her and say, you have no idea what that's like, she's making the point that, you know, she's being the Scott Pollard in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And he is condemning it. So I think that makes it even more interesting.
Our own Akiva Winokur had a pretty solid tweet last night also. He writes, quote, NBA champion Scott Pollard played as many minutes for that Celtics team as Scott St. Pierre.
Yeah, I saw that. That was funny.
Boy, well, very funny. All right. Randy Bailey, our good buddy Randy.
I love that guy.
He tweeted, I can make it through the next 10 episodes of this season without another Debbie crotch blur.
Is he saying he wants that to not be blurred?
I'm not sure exactly what he's saying.
Total blindside.
Yeah, it could be worse.
The bomb doors are open.
All right, hey, watch it, Debbie.
Worse or better? That's what I'm wondering.
Okay. Randy took a shot at Big Brother last night. Big Brother is an excellent training ground for cupcake wars, not Survivor.
Okay.
And finally, Randy says, okay, so we are supposed to hate Scott and Jason now and love Alicia and Debbie. Got it.
Yeah, I don't know if I love any of these people.
Okay. Bryce, the great Bryce Isaiah.
Yeah, I adore that guy.
He tweeted, for some damn salt and pepper, SMH, glad everyone is okay. That's what I was saying about this.
Yeah, well, did you hear the conspiracy theory about this?
No, what's a conspiracy theory?
Apparently, the rumor going around is that this was an immunity challenge. But when everybody was so poleaxed by it, they retroactively decided it was just reward and they created the immunity challenge on the fly for the next day. And I don't know how true that is, but that's the new tinfoil theory going around.
Boy, I do not subscribe to that in the least. Not one bit.
Yeah. I mean, it would kind of make it a little more believable that people would give so much of themselves in a reward challenge for some damn salt and pepper.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, Survivor's pretty carefully planned out, and I don't think they just have another immunity challenge sitting around ready to go.
I'm trying to think of why they would even do that. I mean, the end result was the same, that the Braun tribe ends up having to go to tribal council. I'm not sure what would be the upside of that sort of conspiracy theory.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what would be the outcome. Either. Like, it doesn't make anything different.
Doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, but maybe it look. Who knows? Okay. Russell Hance was back on Twitter last night. He said, you people think that Survivor is fake. Let me say Survivor is the real deal. Who was saying Survivor was fake?
I don't know.
Okay. Do you know Abby Maria is a big Alicia fan? She tweeted, Alicia has a solid point. People were just being jerks. Leave my baby girl alone.
You know, that's a spinoff reality show I would watch. Alicia and Abby Maria get an apartment together.
Yeah. And Pete Yurkowski, at Pete Yurkowski, he tweeted, this episode is just, I don't know, wow, heroes and a-holes.
Now that's a theme season I would watch.
That would be something. And speaking of Pete and Abby, Jess.
Are they back together?
We will find out next week when they are my guests on the Recap podcast.
Oh, wow. Two survivors for the price of one.
Two survivors. We will be in person next Thursday to talk about episode number 5 of Survivor Go Wrong with Pete and Abby.
Very, very exciting.
Very exciting. Voicemails next week with Angie Kant. So exciting week coming up again next week.
That's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited for that.
All right. We were worried that the sushi surfer Jonas might be leaving us. He did not. He's still tweeting along. He tweeted, what could go wrong? Fresh uni topped with raw quail egg and wasabi? Not for beginners. Hashtag sushi. Hashtag white rice Wednesday. Okay. So.
Okay. That sounds delicious.
Yeah. Jonas is just like tweeting out the specials tonight.
Yeah. Oh, sushi.
Yeah. Okay. And Jess, I have another exciting return for you.
Oh, boy.
Because for the first time in Survivor 32.
Oh, boy.
Tweets, baby, tweets, Rupert. Tweets are better than something that happened on Survivor. Rupert tweets.
Yes, Rupert was back on Survivor live tweeting away, Jess.
I saw that and I was so excited because I knew what it meant for today.
So, of course, for those of you guys joining us for the first time, I will give Jessica 4 potential tweets from Rupert Boneham that were tweeted during the show. 3 of them will be actual tweets from Rupert. 1 of them will be a fake tweet created by me. All right.
I like it better when it's a Billy Garcia tweet.
Well, Billy Garcia did not tweet last night, so you can't have everything, Jess.
You know, his 80,000 followers demand content.
That Twitter follow train is going strong, but they are not getting any live tweets from Billy. All right.
Twitter follow train is going off the rails.
Yeah. All right. Here we go, Jess. All right. Tweet number 1 from Rupert.
Survivor is still the toughest game show out there. It damn near killed me.
Okay?
Okay.
Number 2.
it's not the heat. It's the humidity.
Number three,
it's going to be a fun few hours at camp.
And number four,
sometimes it is so hard to keep your mouth shut.
So if Rupert is back with a very, very true to form Rupert tweets this week.
Okay. Well, I think I remember seeing number one and number four.
Oh, wait, you're cheating?
No, I'm not cheating. I'm reading Twitter during Survivor.
You should unfollow Rupert.
I can't unfollow Rupert because his Twitter brings me such joy.
Yeah.
I can't believe you'd even suggest that I deprive myself.
You should
of
mute
that
him for the 24 hours before you come on to the voicemail show.
I looked at a lot of tweets last night, Rob.
Okay.
I'm probably still going to get this wrong.
All right.
So read me back two and three again.
Two and three. Number two was, it's not the heat, it's the humidity. And number three was, it's going to be a fun few hours in camp. All right, Jess, what does your gut say?
And right now, my gut tells me, go use the bathroom.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the only reason, like, my gut is telling me number two.
And right now, my gut tells me, go use the bathroom.
That's what I told Darnell also. And Stephen Fishbeck, yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, the only reason I would say that is because I feel like I heard you guys say it's not the heat, it's the humidity about 40,000 times on last night's know-it-alls, and I don't know if you were quoting Rupert or not.
Okay, so what are you saying?
I'm saying I think you made up number two.
You think that we made up it's not the heat, it's the humidity?
I think that's a pretty common saying,
mm-hmm.
but I think I heard you guys say it enough times. I feel like maybe you would pretend that that's something Rupert would say.
And you think that because it's a common saying, it would eliminate that from being a Rupert tweet?
No, I think Rupert thrives on common sayings. But I think you guys planted that suggestion in my head last night.
We incepted you?
You incepted me.
All right. Well, Jess, you are a winner at the Rupert tweet.
Yeah!
That was the fake tweet. It's not the heat.
I am a winner. I'm a winner at life.
Yes. So congratulations to you, Jess, a winner at the first Rupert tweets of Survivor 32.
Tweets, baby, tweets, Rupert. Tweets that are better than something that happened on Survivor. Rupert tweets.
All right, and Jess, I got nothing else for you.
All right. Well, I feel like what more could you have for me after I won?
Yeah. Yeah. You're the big winner today. You won the Rupert tweets game. Did we get everything off our chest on the whole issue with Alicia?
I think so. I'm never as articulate as I want to be when it comes to these things.
I know it's hard to satisfy everybody, but I feel like that I can rest assured that I feel like I am going to get complaints from people who feel like I went too far and people who feel like I did not go far enough.
That's true. You can't please everybody.
Yeah. So I think I have sufficiently made everybody unhappy with this discussion.
Well, then it has been a success.
Right. Right. That's how you know it was a good negotiation. Everybody's unhappy.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Jess, thank you so much again for joining me. Always a pleasure. Looking forward to reconnecting on Friday night when we recap. Can you believe it? Episode 5 of The Amazing Race already?
Yeah, we're trucking right along.
Yeah, moving right along. Boy, more than a third of the way through this social media edition. And we think it's been pretty good, right?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it a lot more than I thought I would. You go into these things with low expectations, you're guaranteed not to be disappointed.
That's right, Jess. That's right. Okay. Of course, you could follow Jess on Twitter. She is at Haymaker Hattie. Jess also blogs about Survivor on previously.tv, where you could also read her recaps of the Survivor and the Amazing Race, right?
Yes, and assorted other things. I picked up an episode of Fuller House this season.
Oh.
And we did the first half of the Hulu miniseries 11/22/63, yes. But I think nobody is interested in watching the rest of it.
Which episode of Fuller House did you watch?
I did episode 11, which is the one with the Bollywood dance
Yeah,
number.
That's the one I saw through 1 through 10.
Oh, well, get caught up, and then you can read my blog.
Yeah. Okay, that would be perfect. And of course, you could also hear Jess on post-show recaps talking about the Walking Dead book club every week with Josh Wigler following each new episode of Walking Dead.
Yeah, and I got to say, we are having so much fun.
Jess, will you guys be continuing the Walking Dead book club for Fear the Walking Dead?
No, because I don't think I can handle the level of vitriol that Josh levels at Fear the Walking Dead. Okay. I think that kind of negativity in my life might be very stressful.
So you won't be updating us on any of the Fear the Walking Dead comics and how it was originally told?
No, I think we're going to skip that one.
All right.
Although, you know what is really fun sometimes? Like, just mention the airplane segments to Josh.
The webisodes.
And watch him, the webisodes, and watch him get really angry about the flying dead.
Yeah. All right. Well, Jess, we need a hashtag for this conversation. Do you have anything in mind?
How about Gatorade Station?
Gatorade Station. Yeah, I do like that. That'd be really good.
Yeah, I think it's a capital idea.
Yeah. All right. So got to keep everybody hydrated, keep those electrolytes coming. And of course, join Jess and I on Friday night, 9:15 p.m. Eastern Time Live for our amazing race coverage here on Rob is a Podcast. I will also be getting back into Big Brother Canada 4 this Friday. I'll be live at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. If you miss it, you can always catch it in the archives or being subscribed to the podcast. Go to robisawebsite.com/iTunes. Or search for Rob as a Podcast in your favorite podcatcher, or get the Rob as a Podcast app at robisawebsite.com/app for iOS and Android. And again, thanks so much to all of our new patrons for Rob as a Podcast. I do greatly appreciate it. I would love seeing new people come on board. We've done some fun shows on the Patron Cast feed as well. To find out more about that, you can go to robisawebsite.com/patron. Jess, pleasure to talk with you again.
As always.
Looking forward to reading your comments. And I'm going to play you out with something. This is a song submission by one of our listeners, Will. Hello from the Beauty Tribe. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Hello, it's Ty. Yeah, I know that you're a cowboy, but you're still my favorite guy. I found the idol, and that's fine. But I'd give it all to Jason just to know that you'd be mine at the end of the day. I heard that. That's what you say. Hello from the Beauty Tribe. Dr. Joe said you'd be fine. And now I'm so lonely. All the chickens are gone, but it don't matter. Nick clearly doesn't have all my heart. Hello from the Beauty Tribe. Well, hey, at least it wasn't Ty.
Well, hey, at least it wasn't Ty, right?